doing that. For those of you that don't, that this is your first time here, we're in a series called 40 Days of Discipleship, and we're basically going through what's called four-chair discipleship. Chair one, for those of you that don't know, Jesus issues different invitations to different people at different stages of their walk with Christ. The people, chair one, these are the people that are just seekers, that don't know Christ, not in relationship with him, okay? Jesus says, come and see. And then moving from this chair to this chair, there's conversion and baptism. And then chair two people are the new believers. These are the believers. And Jesus says, follow me. Start patterning your life after me. And then you move to chair three. Jesus says, come follow me, and I will send you out to fish for people. These are the workers. These are the people that are beginning the work of the kingdom. And today, we're talking about chair four, which is where Jesus, he said, come and see. He said, follow me. Follow me, and I'll send you out to fish for people. And then this one, he says, go and bear fruit. This person in chair four is the mature disciple maker. This is the main point. Jesus had one goal in life, one goal, which was to make disciples who could make disciples. I want to actually ask you to turn to Matthew chapter 13. He gives us a great parable. It's called the parable of the sower. A man went out to sow seed, and he just threw seed indiscriminately. Some fell on the path where it was hard packed, and the birds came and ate it up. The second, some seed fell among rocky soil. It sprung up quickly, but the sun scorched it, and it died. Other seed fell among thorn-infested soil, where the weeds grew up and choked it out. But the other seed fell on good soil, and it produced a crop 100 or 60 or 30 times what was sown. Now, it's that fourth soil that I want to talk about. These are obviously metaphors for different types of people. So how does one seed produce 100 or 60 or 30 times what's sown? How does one seed do that? Let's say he's sowing grass seed. One seed makes its way into the earth, produces one blade of grass. So what is Jesus talking about? How could that produce 100 times one seed? How could it produce 100 times? Well, let's stop thinking first generation. What happens when that grass seed grows up, like in my yard, when you don't mow it because you're a sports parent and you have no time? What happens? What appears at the head of that when it's fully grown? Seeds. Lots of seeds. Hundreds of seeds. And when you finally get around to it like I do and you mow it, and that seed goes everywhere, producing 100, 60, or 30 times. And what happens when those seeds get into the ground, produce one blade of grass at the top? Are hundreds of seeds. That's what Jesus is saying here. A fully grown blade of grass produces hundreds of seeds that produce more grass, that produce hundreds of seeds that produce more grass. That's what Jesus is referring to here, okay? In the same way, a fully grown Christian will produce 100, 60, or 30 disciples. That's what he's talking about here. John 14, 12, Jesus says this. This is always a very, very challenging thing to me. He says this is the night before he died. He has all his disciples gathered around him. And he says this, very truly I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works I have been doing. And they will do even greater things than these because I'm going to the Father. I always thought, I was like, how in the world could you and I do the works of Jesus? I mean, I always thought that meant miracles. Like, how could I walk on water? I'm not very good at it, are you? I'm not. I've never raised someone from the dead. I've never healed anyone. I'm not very good at this. So what is Jesus referring to? Well, now I know that means disciples. What was the work of Jesus? He made disciples. Whoever follows Jesus will do what he was doing, which will make disciples. That's what he's referring to. It's like this huge revelation went off in my mind when I saw that is what it means. What was the work Jesus did? Make disciples. He passed on his love of God, his relationship with his Father, to his disciples, who in turn made disciples. That's what it was, and that's what the chair four person does. That's where we want everyone to get to, chair four. Many of that are like, I'm not sure about this. First of all, I don't even know what to do. Second of all, I don't even know if I want to do this. Why? This is a little strange for me. You're right. There are huge barriers to this stage right here. Huge barriers to getting this chair. And most people don't really make it. Don't really ever make it. In order to be a chair four person, four radical changes have to happen within you. And this is what we're talking about today. These changes are so radical, so against human nature, so against our culture, so against what most people understand as church, that most people never get it. The four changes that have to happen when we move from chair 3 to chair 4. This is what happened. The first one is we move from being a consumer to being a producer. All right? In Matthew chapter 21, 33 through 43, Jesus tells us this parable of the tenants of a vineyard. It says this. I'm going to go through it line by line here. Verse 33. There was a landowner who planted a vineyard. He put a wall around it, dug a wine press in it, and built a watchtower. Then he rented the vineyard to some farmers and moved to another place. When the harvest time approached, he sent his servants to collect his fruit. Okay? So that's a metaphor for all of us. This is us. The Lord owns it all. This is his world, his stuff, and his everything. And he's rented this space and stuff to us. All right, we're the tenants, the non-owners. God takes us out of our sin. He takes us out of our lostness. He saves us. He cleanses us. He forgives us. He heals us. And things are good. But that's not God's ultimate goal for us. That's not God's ultimate goal for us. He placed the tenants in the vineyard, not so the tenants could have a nice place to stay, but so that they could do the work of the kingdom. And when the time came to produce that fruit, well, the tenants did what a lot of us do when it's time. Verse 35, the tenants seized his servants. They beat one, they killed another, they stoned a third. When he sent other tenants to them, they treated them the same way. See, why did they do this? Why did they do this to the people that it is their tenants? They did this to the servants of the land. Why did they do this? Well, simple. Because they began to think they were the owners. They began to think, they forgot who was sovereign. They began to regard the owner as an outsider. Please write that down. They began to regard the owner as an outsider. An outsider who was trying to tell them what to do in their own property. And with their own lives. That's the way they thought. And many of us believe God to be an outsider if we really got honest with it. That's the way we view God. He's an outsider barging in on our lives trying to tell us what to do. How dare you? Okay? Oh, but we'll take his blessings, especially when we're in trouble. You know, God, get me out of this. God, help me with this. God, I really need you to do this for me. Forgive my sins. But in the end, they thought they were given the vineyard to work. And all the produce was theirs, not God's. All right? God gives us life, gives us talents and abilities, but the fruit of those abilities is for him, not for us. And this is the change that takes place in the mind of a chair 4 person. All right? Well, and God calls us to use abilities and talents, not to gain for ourselves, but to make disciples. We can either tell them to get lost or we can start working. See, and verse 37, last of all, he sent his son to them. They will respect my son, he said. But when the tenants saw the son, they said to each other, here's the heir. Come, let's kill him and take his inheritance. So they took him and threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Therefore, when the owner of the vineyard comes, Jesus asks, what will he do to those tenants? The crowd answered, he will bring those wretches to a wretched end, they replied. And he will rent the vineyard to other tenants who will give him his share of the crop at the harvest time. Jesus said to them, have you not read in the scriptures? The stone the builders rejected has become the cornerstone. The Lord has done this. It is marvelous in their eyes. And here's verse 43. Please underline this in your Bibles. Therefore, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to a people who will produce its fruit. That is God's ultimate goal. Is for us to go and bear fruit, to produce the fruit of the kingdom. Chair 4 people are people who are different than the tenants in this parable. Chair 4 people are the people who are producers and not consumers. If you want to know who a producer is, if you want to know if you're a producer, let's just go to a standard church potluck. Good church potluck. If you're a person that brings a bucket of fried chicken like all good Christians do, okay, all right, and you bring a 20-piece thing of chicken, and you eat 3, you are a producer. Because you have brought more than you have taken out. That's a producer. Now, if you are a person who brings nothing and eat 3 plates, like some of us in here, myself included, you are a consumer. You have taken more than you have brought. Okay, that's just a very, you know, fun example, okay? But how about when it comes to the church, people? Are you a producer or are you a consumer? Most of us are consumers, honestly, and that's why chair 4 people are hard to find. We're consumers of worship. We love to come to church and consume, and it's been set up that way. We consume the music. We consume the sermon. And many times when the sermon isn't good, you say, I haven't been fed today. How do I know that? Take a guess. We choose churches based on what the church offers instead of what we can offer the church, right? We need a cool children's ministry, a happening youth ministry for our kids. We need this program and that program. And if all that doesn't happen to our consumer satisfaction, there are 100 other churches in this area to go to that have exactly what we're wanting to consume, right? Well, a chair four person looks at things very differently, very differently. A chair four person isn't looking for consumption. They're looking for community. And why are they looking for community? Because they know that there are people there who need their influence. That's what a chair four person is. Paul said this, imitate me as I imitate Christ. And that's a mindset of a chair four person. I want to go to a church. I want to be part of a community group so I can be influential so that these people can imitate me as I am imitating Christ. But a producer is someone who says, let me show you what it means to follow Christ. They say, I'll know I'll give more than I receive. That's okay because I'm a producer. See, guys, when I was a child, I was a consumer. And my parents will tell you that. I brought no income into the family. I expended a lot. I used heat, electricity, food, water. My parents paid for sports, clothes, toys, you name it. But that's okay because I was a kid. Now I'm an adult, and it's expected of me to produce. I'm expected to put out more than I get. And that's the same with any adult. I pay for things I don't see the benefit of, a give and a sacrifice. For all the adults in here, that's what you do. That's what you do. That goes with the territory. We're not children anymore. And the same is true of our walk with Christ. When we mature, we give out far more than we bring in. That's just what a mature believer does. Okay, we move from being consumers to producers. What is our opinion of a grown man who puts his needs before those of others? Somebody who eats a whole lot while his children starve, who has brand new shoes while his children don't have shoes. What's our opinion of that person? Not very high. Well, guys, we must move larger and larger numbers of people in this church from being consumers to being producers. These are more than chair three workers. These are people who, by their example and by their investment of time, are passing on their relationship with Christ to other people and being influential. Their goal is to make disciples who can make disciples. They leave a net positive gain on the church, a net positive gain. Okay, when Jesus arrived, how many Christians were there? One, him. When he died, how many were there? There were 11. There should have been 12, but one betrayed him. There were 11. He had a net positive gain on the church. How about you? Are you having a net positive influence on the church, on the kingdom? Are you giving more financially than you're receiving? Are you making more disciples than just yourself? Are you leading people to a closer walk with Jesus? Or if you happen to disappear, no great ministry would stop. No great program would go unfunded. No great drop in disciples would happen. I'm afraid many of us have what I call a toxic K-Love relationship. I have a toxic relationship with K-Love, okay? I was flipping through channels the other day, and K-Love came on. And you know what time of the year it is if you listen to K-Love? It's pledge drive time, okay? I was listening to some music, and my kids like it and everything like that. And all of a sudden, the pitch to give and be stewards and everything, I turned off the channel. Why? Because I've got a toxic relationship with Caleb. I'm a consumer. I'm not a producer. I take, but when it comes time to actually fund, I don't. Okay? And if Caleb disappeared, no great deal. No big deal. I'm sorry. I have no problem with Caleb, but that's kind of a very toxic, one-sided relationship. Is that your relationship with the church? Is that your relationship with the kingdom? Are you a one-way consumer and not a producer? How does Jesus end this parable? Therefore, I tell you, the kingdom of God will be taken away from you and given to those who will produce its fruit. It doesn't say consume its fruit. It says produce its fruit. If we're going to move into chair four, we must move from being a consumer to being a producer, to giving more than we take, to influencing more than we're influenced. That's the first change that has to happen. That's the most difficult one. The second one is from dependent to autonomous. Hebrews 6:1 says this, therefore, let us move beyond the elementary teachings about Christ and be taken forward to maturity. I remember the first time I was challenged to read the Bible. I was in a band. I was in a Christian band with some guys. And one of the guys, I was 19, 20 years old, and a guy came up and he said, you know, I just finished reading the New Testament. And I'm getting ready to start on the Old Testament. And I was like, I was floored. I never knew anyone that read the Bible. I'd never met anyone that actually read the whole New Testament. I mean, I thought this guy was some kind of super apostle, maybe some kind of super prophet from the Old Testament. And I said, you read the New Testament? And he goes, yeah, don't you have a Bible? I was like, yeah, I got like five. He said, do you ever consider reading it? And I was like, I mean, I just didn't think about that kind of stuff. I didn't think anybody did that kind of stuff. Tier 4 people need less and less of the preacher. As a matter of fact, they rarely look to Sunday morning as their biggest time of influence. This is really big. Many times, Tier 4 people think there's something wrong with them. The Sunday morning is not their biggest lifeline. They think there's something wrong with them. I'm telling you, there's nothing wrong with you. It simply means that you're part of the church for a different reason now. You're part of this church for a different reason now. Okay, you've matured to the point where the sermon isn't your primary mode of growing. You've learned to feed yourself. It's okay. That's the goal. So people say, well, you tell me Tier 4 people don't need to be a part of the church? Hardly. That is not what I'm saying at all. There's that consumer mentality popping up again. If you're not here to consume, then you don't need to be here. No. Absolutely not. If anything, Tier 4 people need Sunday morning more than anyone else. Tier 4 people need worship. They need to be part of the kingdom. More than that, someone else here on Sunday morning needs to see them. They are producers, not consumers. Okay? I guess, is there anyone who qualifies as a Tier 4 person here? I hope it would be me, I guess. But let me tell you, I need Sunday mornings more now than at any time in my life. I teach 7 times a week. I teach 2 services Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon at Jessamine County Detention Center, Tuesday morning at Fayette County Detention Center, Wednesday night community group, Friday morning men's discipleship group, Friday afternoon Revive Lifehouse, Biblical Manhood. 7 times a week I'm teaching, I'm giving out. And that's draining, guys. It's spiritually draining. And add that to pastoral care that needs to happen. Mission trips need to be planned. Trying to be an example for my kids, my first disciples. I'm telling you, Sunday morning worship, I could not do it without. I could not do my schedule without Sunday morning worship. I couldn't live without it. You say, well, you have to be here. You're the pastor. Well, even when we're on vacation, we still go to church. Why? Because it's essential to being a Christian. Tier 4 people begin to see Sunday mornings in a completely different light. Is a time where they give. They give their worship. They give their wisdom. They give financially. They give encouragement. See, they've learned to feed themselves throughout the week. They don't need someone to feed them. Okay, they've learned to study scripture. They're listening to Christian podcasts. They're involved in ministry that is life-giving and life-sustaining. Whatever means used to grow, you've learned to do it on your own. You don't wait around for Sunday sermon to be your primary mode of growth. That is the goal. And because of this, because Tier 4 people are more autonomous than dependent, they can look really threatening to people. They can look threatening to church structures. They can look threatening because they're independent and they're free-thinking adults. They aren't dependent on the church to give them a place to serve a lot of times. They find their calling. They go with it. And that can upset some people. Not here. We're not upset with you. We want you to do that. We want you to serve where you're called. If it's here at Catalyst, wonderful. If it's out in the community, wonderful. If it's a ministry you start, wonderful. I just made a mental list this morning, just now when we were in worship, of ministries that have been started by people here at Catalyst or participated in by Catalyst people, okay, that have nothing to do with us. I'm sure I'm leaving out some, and if I do, I apologize. These are just ones I could think off the top of my head this morning 5 minutes ago. All right, Catalyst Christian Church, for starters. A bunch of people here started this church 8 years ago. Let's see here. Active Water, digging wells and planting churches in rural villages. 127 Ministry, supporting foster and adoptive parents. Asian Church Planting Mission, planting churches in persecuted countries in Asia. Catalyst Orphanage, now having over 100 children. Inside Out Dad, reaching incarcerated fathers. Global Redemption in Haiti. Backpacks for Food at an elementary school here in Nicholsville. Both are missionaries in Honduras. Rob Esposito, Laura Baxter started their own ministries. These are things that have just happened from people just following Jesus. And I'm sure there are more. And if there are, please tell me so I can mention it second service. Guys, we move from being dependent to being autonomous. We feed ourselves, and that's what Tier 4 people do. The third is that we move from being sheep to being a shepherd. 2 Timothy 4, 1 through 2 says, in the presence of God in Christ Jesus, who will judge the living and the dead, in view of his appearing in his kingdom, I give you this charge. Preach the word. Be prepared in season and out of season. Correct, rebuke, and encourage with great patience and careful instruction. A Greek proverb says this. The true meaning of life is to plant trees under whose shade you will never sit. In other words, you will do things that will not benefit you. Your primary actions will be for the benefit of those who come after you, whose actions you may never witness, whose faces you'll never see, whose names you'll never know. You move from being a sheep to being a shepherd. You begin to take responsibility for the spiritual growth and care of other people. You say that's the minister's job, really? That's what's become lost in American Christianity. We stopped looking at what Jesus did, at his methods, instead made the church a shadow of corporate America where the pastor is the hourly employee and the church members are the customers. Is that what Jesus did? Did he look at his 12 disciples and say, I'm the head guy, therefore I'll be doing all the teaching, all the preaching, all the healing, all the direction? You all just learn. But I'm in charge of spiritual growth and care. No, it was never part of Jesus' teachings. Jesus' methods were very different. They were more like the team where he was the coach and his disciples were the players. He coached them. He taught them the game and sent them out to play. That's what Jesus did. And he taught them to do ministry, and they went out and did it. He taught them to make disciples, and they went out and made disciples. We need a church full of people who understand this. That's what we need. For the past year and a half, I've been meeting with a group of guys on Friday morning at Jay's place. And from the very beginning, I said, this is discipleship. We will end. We will not meet forever. We are going to, at some point, you will go out, and you'll have a group like this, and you will make disciples. That's what we're trained to do. Well, this week, one of the guys came to me and said, hey, this is my last Friday. Because from now on, I'm going to be meeting with, and he told me a guy who he's going to be discipling. He's not a minister. He's just a chair for a Christian who's moved from being a sheep to being a shepherd. And it's taking responsibility for someone else's spiritual growth and care. And that's just a start. That's a start. That's the goal of this church. We build up people, make disciples who can make disciples. We people who are planting churches, planting trees under whose shade they'll never sit in. This was Jesus' method. This was also Paul's method. Everywhere Paul went, he appointed elders to lead the people, perfectly comfortable leaving them because he had made disciples who in turn make disciples. That's the way the church grew. See, guys, the game completely changes when you make this move. Completely changes. Your understanding of church completely changes. Your understanding of life completely changes. Your understanding of Jesus completely changes. The focus of your life, the way you spend your time, money, efforts, passions completely changes when you make this change. This past Tuesday, I just gotten back from prison ministry in Lexington. It was a beautiful day heading down to Jay's place for a frozen grasshopper. Oh, yeah. And I was answering correspondence. I'd want to call me and said, hey, do you have a meeting? And I said, no. She said, well, there's some guy trying to get into the church. And I said, okay, I'll be there in just a second. So I run up here, and it's one of the guys from my Inside Out Dad class in Jessamine County. And now, just that past Sunday, he told me that he had 3 more months. And he's standing right here. I was like, man, please tell me you didn't break out. You know, walk away. Please tell me. He goes, no. They just told me this morning to come, you know, get my stuff and get out. And he goes, I went back down to my old boss. I got my job, but he's out. I don't start working until tomorrow. He goes, I've got the clothes on my back, and that's about it. And you said that when we got out to call you and you take us out to lunch. I said, absolutely, man, let's go. So we went over and got something to eat and everything. And a long story short, he wound up working in my house, did some great work. He's a tree trimmer, did a great work. Well, as he was finishing up working in my house on Friday, he called me over and said, hey, man, I just want to let you know something. He goes, I talked to my ex up in Ohio, the one that had sworn out a warrant for his arrest. And he said, she said, well, what are you doing? He said, I don't really know. Where are you going to go? I don't know. And she said, well, the kids really miss you. And if you'd like to come up here and we can give it another shot, I'd like that. And he said, prior to taking your class, I would have just told her what I thought of her and everything, but ever since I took your class, I think I'm going to do it. He just said, I just want to thank you. And it was an amazing, amazing thing. But guys, that's a tree under which I'll never sit. I have no idea what's going to happen when he goes up to Ohio. I have no idea what kind of influence he's going to have on his kids. I have no idea, you know. But guys, that's what it's all about. It's about planting trees that you'll never sit under. being influential. Chair 4 people are influential. They move from being sheep to being shepherd. I have some suggestions if you'd like to do that. I would like for Chair 4 people to begin praying for services on Saturday night. Take your Saturday night and pray for what happens here on Sunday mornings. Pray for pastors. Get here early and pray over each seat. Fast and pray for revival. We need people taking ownership and influence over other people's walk with Christ. And the fourth change that has to happen is from optional to essential. Chair 4 people don't look at Jesus' command as the great option. They look at it as the great commission. Matthew 7:21 says this, "Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only one who does the will of my Father who's in heaven." The last change in moving to Chair 4, see the work of Christ differently. The Great Commission is not the great option, it's the Great Commission. We are called, commissioned, ordered. That is not an option. And so we're called to do the greater things than Jesus. What does Jesus tell us to do? Very simple. One, he says, go into all the world and make disciples. All the world and make disciples. That means yourself, your home, your church, your place of business, your community, your state, your nation, other nations. Go into all the world. Those are our orders. Second thing he says, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. It isn't enough just to serve. It isn't enough just to do nice things for people. We are called to baptize, which means we're called to preach Christ and him crucified. Okay, Jesus said to do baptisms. In other words, it's not the Great Commission if we're not preaching Christ and we're not converting. The goal isn't service. The goal is discipleship. Now, service is fine. It's a great thing. Don't get me wrong. Many times we serve out of love with no expectations of anything else. However, if no one comes to Christ, it's not kingdom work. We are to baptize. Third, teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded you. Teaching them to obey. Conversion is not enough. It's not enough to baptize. Okay? We're commanded to baptize and to teach everything Christ commanded. That's it. That's the purpose of life. Go, baptize, teach, repeat. Go, baptize, teach. Go, baptize, teach. That's it. Where? Everywhere. The adventure's begun. And Jesus says, I'm with you to the end of the age. I'm going to invite the band to come on back up. Jesus had one goal, to make disciples who can make disciples. What happens if we don't? That sounds great, doesn't it? What happens if we don't? What happens if we just stay in our default mode of just kind of doing church, being chair one, being chair two type people? What happens if we do that? Well, I'll tell you what. It's already happened. After the Israelites were delivered out of slavery and out of Egypt, when Moses parted the Red Sea, all that great story, the next generation of leadership was Joshua. Never before had the nation of Israel been that faithful to God. That's when they took Jericho and they took the promised land and they were faithful. They had never been that faithful to God before. The nation of Israel was firing on all cylinders. Never before, never again will they be that faithful to the Lord. Everything was great. And then came the saddest and most haunting of all Bible verses. I will tell you that this passage keeps me up at night. It's like a pebble in my shoe, a grain of dust in my eyes. I can't stop thinking about it. I can't get it off my mind. It's from Judges 2, 7 through 15. It says this, "The people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived them and who had seen the great things the Lord done for Israel. And Joshua, son of Nun, died," verse 10. "After that whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. They had not made disciples. Then the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord and served the Baals. They forsook the Lord, the God of their ancestors, who had brought them out of Egypt. They followed and worshiped various gods of the people around them. They aroused the Lord's anger because they forsook him and served the Baals and the Asherahs. In his anger against Israel, the Lord gave them over to hands of raiders who plundered them. He sold them into the hands of their enemies all around, whom they were no longer able to resist. When Israel went out to fight, the hand of the Lord was against them to defeat them, just as he had sworn to them. They were in great distress." When the church fails its mission to make disciples, when fathers and mothers fail to pass on the faith to their children, when Christian businessmen and Christian businesswomen think their job is more important than making disciples, when sports and activities and life and vacations and work and play and leisure become more important than making disciples, an entire generation will grow up who knows neither the Lord nor what he's done for America. We'll turn and serve the idols of food, sports, sex, media, money. We will be plundered by raiders such as drug addiction, depression, fear, discord, and violence. The very hand of God will be against us. Do we really think we'll escape the judgments of God for our disobedience? Israel didn't. neither will we. Learn our lesson from history. Learn the lesson of what happens when we refuse to do what God has commanded us to do. Learn the lesson of what happens when we forsake the adventure of faith God's calling us to. If you're in chair one, Jesus said, come and see. Your next step is conversion, baptism. Is that you today? If you're in chair two, Jesus invited you to follow him, to learn, to grow. Your next step is learning and growing, and after that, committing to be a worker. If you're in chair three, Jesus invited you to follow him, and he will make you fishers of people. Your job is to do the work of the kingdom, and your next step is to find someone to invest your life in. If you're in chair four, Jesus invited you to go and bear fruit 100, 60, or 30 times what was planted. Your job is to make disciples who can make disciples. It's a time of decision. What is your next step? That's what I want to ask you on this card. I want to ask you to write on the back what your next step is. During the time of worship, before the offering, I want to ask you what your next step is. Fill this out. Place this in the offering plate.